Meet Flip. She's one half of a flip-flop.
That's me.
Who got left behind at Celebration Key, Carnival's exclusive paradise in Grand Bahama.
I chose to stay here. It really is paradise.
So now, Flip spends her time lounging on the beach, swimming in the lagoon.
And eating. The only thing more impressive than my appetite are all the dining options.
Yeah, have you tried food service to your cabana?
Ooh, yum.
Flip, where'd she go? Book your cruise vacation to Carnival Celebration Key, a paradise you'll want to lose yourself in. Ships Registry, the Bahamas and Panama.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Bill Browder is with me now, though. Who is Bill Browder? Bill Browder is a financier and a political commentator. He was, at one time, the biggest foreign investor in Russia until one night Vladimir Putin woke up and decided he was a threat to national security. He has since been described as Vladimir Putin's number one enemy. Bill, you're very welcome to the show, and it is good to talk to you again. Since we last spoke, I mean, there has been much change in Ukraine, and there's this sense we're kind of in a new phase, that after a period of kind of frozen war and almost stagnation, that we've got what's happening in the Kursk region, and you've got Ukrainians on Russian territory using US and UK missiles on Russian territory, an escalation of things, yet looming peace talks somewhere on the horizon, given Trump's looming presidency, which a texter got in touch about there as well. What's your sense of what's happening?
Well, you know, everybody is looking at Ukraine and saying, God, this is terrible. Ukraine is losing. You know, Ukraine is outgunned and outmanned by the Russians. But what a lot of people aren't looking at is that Putin is also losing. You know, he's had a humiliating defeat in Syria in the last 10 days. This was a country that he was supposed to be propping up, which fell to the rebels. Putin has run out of soldiers. He's had to bring in North Koreans and Houthi soldiers to fight in Ukraine. Putin's economy is going down the tubes. Interest rates are like 28% in Russia right now. It's a real mess for Putin. And so, yes, Ukraine is suffering, and it breaks my heart every day what the pain that they're experiencing. But everybody who says that Ukraine should somehow capitulate because Putin is such a strong man, I think doesn't understand that Putin is also having real problems.
Yeah, do you know what I was reminded of when I was thinking about our conversation was, you know that great line, I think it's in The Sun Also Rises, about how somebody becomes bankrupt and it's slowly at first and then all of a sudden. And people use it to describe the kind of collapse of empire as well. How does it happen? Slowly at first and all of a sudden. And I just wonder, and maybe this is the triumph of hope over expectation, but are we in the all of a sudden phase or the beginning of that phase when it comes to Vladimir Putin?
Well, I think we're in the all of a sudden phase on both sides. So Donald Trump has promised to end the war in one day. That was what he said during his campaign. And what he seems to mean by that is he wants to cut off military aid for Ukraine, which America provides 50% of. And so it could all happen at once, that Ukraine runs out of money because America stops funding it, and there's a collapse on the Ukrainian side. That's one possibility. And then, as you were alluding to, there's the other possibility is that you know, Putin is running out of everything. He's running out of men. He's got to pay. They used to pay $4,000 for soldiers to show up to sign up for the war, in order to get Russian soldiers, because they don't want to do a draft. Now it costs $47,000 because nobody wants to go and die in Ukraine, and that's of course after they've cleared out all the prisons and gave all the prisoners amnesty if they fought in Ukraine. Now they're all dead. And so it could easily happen on the other side, but it's not going to happen on the other side. It's not going to happen to Putin if the West gives up on Ukraine right now, which is in question. It's we don't know what Trump is going to do, and Trump is, when he becomes president on January 20th.
It's been many years since you could travel to Russia safely, but you would have a better sense of the mood on the ground than I would, for instance, and lots of people listening to this show. I mean, what is the view of the public, the great unwashed, as people might call them, in Russia, of their president?
Well, I think that most people in Russia aren't really, you know, all that clearly aware of what's happening, because Putin sort of bombards the airwaves and the television stations and everything with misinformation and outright lies about what's going on. And in fact, what Putin has tried to tell the Russian people is that we're not at war. In fact, if you call what Russia is doing in Ukraine a war publicly, you go to jail for 8 years. They call it a special military operation. And so people are in the big cities like Moscow and St. Petersburg, you know, they're kind of living an okay life. And they're, you know, they see this thing about a special military operation on TV, but it's not a war. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why Putin doesn't want to institute a draft, because he doesn't want people to feel like there's a war, because if they felt like there was a war, then all of a sudden they might not be so supportive. Now, this does not take into account the mothers and daughters and brothers and husbands and wives of the 750,000 young men who have been either killed or maimed so far. Those people definitely know there's a war, and those people are definitely unhappy about it. But most of those people either are families of prisoners or families of poor people in very distant places. And so if you were to show up in Moscow right now, you know, it'd be real good times in the restaurants and bars and nightclubs and so on, because it doesn't feel like there's a war in Moscow.
To what extent, Bill, is what happened in Syria a possible inflection point as well?
I think it's a huge inflection point. First of all, what it shows very clearly is that Putin's resources are spread too thin. He just doesn't have the capacity to fight a war in Syria, and because he's doing all this stuff in Ukraine. And by the way, it kind of went without notice, but he also had to give up on parts of Armenia that he was protecting. He was protecting parts of Armenia, Nagorno-Karabakh, and he basically had to pull his soldiers out of there, and the Azerbaijanis took over that part of Armenia. That happened a while ago. He also has been trying to do various things in Moldova. There was an election in Moldova. They tried to interfere in that election. That didn't work out the way Putin wanted it to. They tried to interfere in an election in Romania recently. They put a pro-Russian candidate there, and they spent tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars on social media interference on TikTok and other stuff. The guy won the first round, and then the Supreme Court in Romania annulled the election. And so he's got a lot of stuff sort of failing all over. And my sense, just knowing Putin, is that all this failure is humiliating, at least the failure that people know about. You know, what happened in Syria is definitely humiliating. And Putin is a guy who doesn't do humiliation well. And so what does he do? You know, he wants to be seen as a strong man. If he's not seen as a strong man, the Russian people will turn on him. And so my fear and my sense is that the situation in Syria is a turning point. It's a turning point for him to go even more brutal in Ukraine, because he's got to use Ukraine as the way to show the Russian people that, he's the strong man. He's still in charge. You don't need to doubt him.
So what should happen, or what needs to happen, from the point of view of those Western powers now who support Ukraine?
Well, my suggestion is one thing really simple, which is that, you know, Trump has threatened to take away all this money. Ukraine desperately needs the money to continue fighting. But one thing that happened after the war started is that the allies, all the major, the US, UK, EU, et cetera, froze $300 billion of Russian central bank reserves, money that belonged to the Russian government. That money has stayed frozen from then until now. Trump is threatening to cut off the money. If he cuts off the money, there'll be a catastrophe in Ukraine. If there's a catastrophe in Ukraine, there'll be 15 million Ukrainian refugees flooding across Europe, and they'll show up in Ireland and the UK and everywhere. One way to prevent that is to just confiscate that $300 billion, that take Putin's money and use Putin's money to fight back for the Ukrainians, to give them that money so that they don't have to worry about whether Trump cuts them off or not, that they've got money to continue the war, to continue to defend themselves, to stop Russia from coming into Ukraine and taking over cities and raping all the women and murdering all the men and kidnapping all the children. And so from my policy standpoint, what I'm suggesting to politicians, and this is not falling on deaf ears at the moment, is confiscate the $300 billion and let Putin pay for Ukraine's defense.
Why do you think there's a reluctance to do that amongst Western powers?
Well, first of all, it requires all the Western powers to do it together.
Mm.
You know, one country can't do it by itself, because if they did, then people would say, well, that country's not safe to keep your money in. But if all the civilized countries do it, then there's no great risk of that happening. And it's really hard to get countries to, you know, to get politicians and governments to move expeditiously. It's not an easy thing to do. I've seen this with my own eyes, having worked on sanctions legislation for the last 15 years, and it takes a long time to get people to do stuff, even if it's the right thing to do. And so, you know, we're sort of stuck in this molasses of international cooperation. And then within each country, you've got bureaucrats deep into the government saying, wow, we haven't done that before. And they're not even thinking about the consequences. They're just saying, well, that might, you know, that's unprecedented. You know, there's some questions about how we adjust the laws to make that happen. And they throw out all these bureaucratic traps to start the thing from moving forward. And in the meantime, we're facing Armageddon. We're going to face, you know, if Russia takes over a big part of Ukraine, we're going to have refugees everywhere. Not only that, but Russia will then say, well, hell, why don't we take over Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania? And then either we protect them to, you know, so that Russia doesn't do that, or we allow that to happen. And then all of a sudden Russia, you know, we're back to like 1930s Europe where you know, Iron Curtain type stuff. And that could be easily prevented if you just sort of ran roughshod over all the, you know, bureaucrats in the back office who are just trying to put up, you know, obstacles to make something relatively, you know, definitive change.
Bill Browder, financier, political commentator. Bill, a real, real pleasure. And thanks a million for taking the time to chat to us.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.